Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, sports fans. It is about 100 degrees outside, and all we have right now is baseball. I think we're going to mix it up a little bit with how we get into this show. Good evening, everybody. Ryan Stern here. Welcome to Beyond the Benches. We are brought to you tonight by Backsports Page, www.backsportspage.com. You can find them at Backsports Page on Twitter or on Facebook at Backsports Page. If you want to join the program tonight, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. We're going to get into a little bit of NHL free agency. We'll get into some MLB action and go into the All-Star game. See who was deserved of the selection, who got robbed of a spot at Citi Field this year. And if we have time left, maybe we'll get into a little bit of fantasy football because, hey, we're getting close to fantasy football draft season. And that's one big thing that we're going to focus on this season. As the season starts coming along, we're going to have plenty of guests for you for your fantasy football needs. Jumping right in, we're going to talk a little bit of NHL free agency. Free agency began on the 5th, which was Friday, and it started with a bang. You have the biggest move, in my opinion, was the captain of the Ottawa Senators. He played 18 years in Ottawa, 17 or 18 years in Ottawa. Everyone thought that Daniel Alfredson was going to be a lifelong Senator. He said that he was coming back for at least one more year. Everyone said, okay, well, of course he's going to come back to Ottawa. And lo and behold, the Detroit Red Wings go out and snag him. It's going to be difficult watching Daniel Alfredson play in another jersey. He's one of those guys that when you think of a team, you think of one player, and Daniel Alfredson is definitely the guy that you've always thought of with the Ottawa Senators. Now he's going to be wearing the logo of the Detroit Red Wings. I think it's a great fit. I think they are a team who could use some veteran leadership. They are an awfully young team. They're a skilled team, but they lack a lot of experience throughout the lineup. And I think he's going to play a big part in Detroit making one more run at a Stanley Cup next year. Some other big moves. You have the New Jersey Devils letting go of David Clarkson. And for the money that he signed for in Toronto, I have no problem with them letting go. He signed a 7-year, 36, almost $37 million contract. This is a guy who has two pretty good years under his belt in the NHL. He's 29 years old, and he's had two good years. And now he's making over $5 million a year for 7 years. This is one contract that you're going to look at and in the next 2 or 3 years and see, okay, are they going to use the amnesty buyout on David Clarkson? I do not think that he's worth that kind of money. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. Is he top three? Is he first line forward? No. He's probably a second or third liner, a good second or third liner. But he's now getting paid to be a top two forward. He's not that. I'm sorry. He's just not that. To fill in the Clarkson spot, the Devils decided to go out and steal Ryan Clough away from the Rangers. Now, they gave him almost $5 million a year for 5 years. So you're looking at a little less money. You're looking at 2 years less on the contract. But if there's one thing that Ryan Clough has and David Clarkson doesn't, is an injury issue. Ryan Clough had a couple concussions over the past two seasons where he played in San Jose and then over on Broadway. Ryan Clough, again, this is a guy who made his name in San Jose as a big power forward, and he's going to do that for New Jersey. But the big question is how many games will he be able to play because of the physical aspect of his game and the concussion issues that he has. In Philly, they decide to use their amnesty buyout on both Danny Briere and Ilya Bryzgalov. I apologize. So Danny Briere, Ilya Bryzgalov, both bought out by the Flyers, and they go out and for the second time around bring Ray Emery in to be their backstop. Ray Emery had a year off from the NHL, came back and only lost one game in regulation last year. But it says a lot about a player, especially a goalie, when you only have one loss during the regular season and then you can't get in 1 minute during a team's run to winning the Stanley Cup. That was Joey Crawford's job the entire way. They didn't even hesitate when it came to Ray Emery. So it's not a big financial risk. It's only a year for about $1.5 million. But Ray Emery doesn't have the defense in front of him that he did in Chicago. The Philadelphia Flyers are one of the better offensive teams in the game, and they went out and they also signed Vinny LeCavalier away from after the Tampa Bay Lightning bought him out. With LeCavalier, I'm surprised he didn't end up in Montreal. There have been rumors of LeCavalier to Montreal for God knows how many years. That's where he's from. He would be looked at as a fan favorite up there. But again, why he didn't end up there, I don't know why. But Philly offered him the money, and he now gets to play on a very similar team. He gets to play on a team that's going to score a lot of goals, that is going to give up a lot of goals, and doesn't have a proven goalie to stop those. One of the other surprising moves that we saw is Jerome Iginla. Jerome Iginla decided to utilize his no-trade clause in his contract when the Calgary Flames tried to trade him to the Boston Bruins. Everyone said that the trade was already, it was done. It was completed. And then he decided to use his no-trade clause. All of a sudden, he's a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Well, season's over. He's now a free agent. And he signs a one-year, $6 million deal with those same Boston Bruins. It's one that really makes you think as to what was going on during the actual around the trade deadline. With the Boston Bruins, they traded away their biggest hope for the future, who hasn't really developed much. He had one good year out of the three so far. Tyler Seguin was dealt to the Dallas Stars, who have really started to acquire some pieces. I really like what the Stars, what they're doing as they try to get back to the playoffs, which they've missed the past couple years. The Bruins also lost maybe their top scorer or probably even their best player during the playoffs, Nathan Horton, who signs a 7-year deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Watch out for Columbus. They are a young team. They're going into a very tough division. Remember, we have the new realignment plan this year. And they're going to be in a division with the Rangers, Devils, Islanders, who are starting to make their presence felt, the Penguins, the Flyers, and the Capitals. That's a real tough division. But watch out for those Columbus Blue Jackets. They tied for the 8th playoff spot last year. And they didn't get in because the Minnesota Wild held the tiebreaker. But Sergei Bobrovsky, who really came out of nowhere, wins the Vezina on a team that didn't make the playoffs. That shows you the direction that the team is heading. They're heading in. They have a defensive-minded team. They have a lot of young players who are coming into their own, starting to score. And I'm going to be looking very closely at the Columbus Blue Jackets come September and October. And one of the bigger trades that we've seen so far, the Ottawa Senators, fresh off losing their captain, acquire Bobby Ryan. Now, Bobby Ryan has been on the trading block, it seems, ever since he's come up to the NHL. He's a very talented power forward. He can score. He can do a lot of things. Anaheim just didn't have the space for him. They signed Getzlaf and Perry to long-term deals. And Ryan, as even though they wanted to have him as part of their future, they just couldn't afford him. So they trade Bobby Ryan to Ottawa. They get Jacob Silverberg. Now, for anyone who watched any Ottawa Senators games last year, knows that Jacob Silverberg is probably going to be a good player in this league. They also got Stefan Nosin, who was a first-round draft pick in 2011, and they also get the Ottawa first-round draft pick in 2014. So that was a pretty big trade. You have the Red Wings losing Valtteri Filippula, who was a big part of their team over the past couple of years. He signs with Tampa, 5 years, $25 million. Victor Solberg leaves the Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks to sign with the Predators. And the Blackhawks also lost Dave Boland, who scored the game-winning goal in Game 6, in that amazing Game 6. They bought him out, which it was one of those weird things, because here's a guy who maybe scores the biggest goal in the entire season, and they get rid of him so quickly. So that was kind of interesting. The Canadiens sign Danny Briere after the Flyers waive him. And back to the Devils, who let Clarkson walk away, they do re-sign Patrick Elias. Patrick Elias is the all-time points leader in franchise history. He's not the same player he used to be, and they still gave him about $5.5 million a year for 3 years. So that's something that is very it may come back to haunt them if Patrick Elias starts to decline the way that he has started to over the past year or two. All right, and now we're going to transition into a little bit of a little MLB. We have the All-Star Game coming up. And it's going to be taking place at Citi Field over there in Queens, home of the New York Mets. You have the All-Star teams were announced, and I'm a big fan of the fact that the fans did get one thing right. Chris Davis, who is just having the season of a lifetime, was the highest vote getter and absolutely deserved it. The one counter action to that is that they also picked Bryce Harper to go start the All-Star game. Bryce Harper hasn't been on the field for half the season. Andrew McCutchen should have been the guy. There's no way. Andrew McCutchen is the best player on what is right now the best team in Major League Baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yes, it kind of sounds funny when you say it. The Pittsburgh Pirates are the best team in Major League Baseball. Andrew McCutchen deserves to be a starter over Bryce Harper. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The biggest thing that you're going to hear from is that David Wright ended up being the starter for the National League for the All-Star game in his home stadium, and was originally down maybe about 2 weeks ago. He was down about 200,000 votes, ended up with a lead of about 800,000 votes. So in about a two-week span, you have about a million vote swing, which really tells you that the city of New York really came through and got their guy in. Now, the starting pitcher for the National League should be Matt Harvey. Matt Harvey is probably the most up there with Clayton Kershaw as the most dominant pitcher in the National League. The fact that it is at his home stadium, again, he should be there. He should be the one that's starting the game. Unfortunately for him, he has a scheduled start on the Sunday right before. What is Bruce Bochy going to do? Is he going to allow Harvey to go out for one inning so he can get his big applause, which he absolutely deserves? Or will Terry Collins not even allow him, because what is most important is the future for Matt Harvey? And do you risk any sort of future by allowing him to pitch on 2 days rest? He absolutely deserves it. Whether or not he gets it, it's going to be one thing that we have to look for. One thing that let's actually get into is, let's look at the scoreboard for today. Earlier, you had the New York Mets behind the stellar pitching of Jeremy Hefner, with a 2-1 victory over the Milwaukee Brewers. The Mets out-hit Milwaukee 11-3. But the fact that, again, the Mets have so much difficulty with runners in scoring position. I don't have the stat in front of me. I don't see any way that the Mets are hitting over 220 with the runners in scoring position. But they do get the victory today. They pulled to 11 games under 500. Over in the Bronx, the great one, Mariano Rivera, blows the save and gets the loss, as the Baltimore Orioles score two runs in the top of the ninth and avoid a sweep at the hands of the Yankees and win 2-1. Now you have the Cleveland Indians out slugging the Detroit Tigers 9-6. In interleague play, the Seattle Mariners with a 3-1 win over the Cincinnati Reds. The Washington Nationals, who are starting to play much better baseball, was about 2 weeks ago that I was complaining about how they just haven't seemed to step up or have the desire to be the team that they were last year. They're starting to play better. They're now four games over 500. And they come away with the 11-7 win over the San Diego Padres. The Toronto Blue Jays, who are now coming back down to earth after their long winning streak, they do come away with the win today over the Minnesota Twins, 11-5. The Philadelphia Phillies, with the big intra division win over the Atlanta Braves, 7-3. Tampa Bay behind David Price, who this is now David Price's second start since he's come off the disabled list, and he's been lights out both starts. And Tampa Bay needs David Price to be the David Price of last year if they're going to overtake Baltimore, Boston, and the Yankees. The scorching hot Oakland A's just put a whooping on the Kansas City Royals, 10-4. The St. Louis Cardinals, who just never seem to go away. It's amazing how no matter who's in the Cardinals uniform, they always come out winners, seems. They edge out the Miami Marlins, 3-2 in St. Louis. The Chicago Cubs with an 11-inning victory over the number one team in all of Major League Baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Texas Rangers squeak by the hapless Houston Astros, 5-4. The Dodgers come away with a big win over the Giants, and man, what happened to the Giants? The Giants seem to it's a 1-1 game going into the ninth. The Dodgers score 3 runs in the top of the ninth, and what's been the San Francisco Giants' biggest asset over the past couple of years has been their pitching, and their pitching has just absolutely gone down the tubes this year. And then you also have the Arizona Diamondbacks with a 6-1 victory over the Colorado Rockies. Your Sunday night baseball game tonight will have the Boston Red Sox going out west and facing the Anaheim Angels. The Red Sox, with a 54-35 record. The Angels, with a 42-45 record. I think if before the season started, you would have said that those records would have been there, but it would have been from the opposite teams. Everyone and their mother was picking the Angels, including myself, to be a big part of the renaissance of the American League West. And the fact that they're under 500. This is a team that went out and spent money to bring in Josh Hamilton this year. They have Albert Pujols. They have a stacked lineup. They just can't seem to do anything when it comes to putting together a nice long streak. The Red Sox have as comfortable a lead as anyone in all of baseball has. They're the only team that has a 5-game lead over the second-place team. They have a 5-game lead over two teams, Tampa Bay and Baltimore, both tied for first, 5 games behind Boston. Over in the Central, Detroit, still playing great baseball, but, man, those Cleveland Indians, they had a hot start. Then they came back down to earth. Now they're coming back again. They're only 2.5 games out. Detroit is going to kick themselves for not putting more distance between them and the rest of the division, because they are the class of the AL Central. There's no doubt about that. They need some help in the bullpen. some guys that may be available from trade deadline time. You may look for them to ask the Mets about Bobby Parnell. I think they'll have to give up quite a bit if they want Parnell, but I don't think the Mets would have Parnell as an untouchable. I think if the right price is right, they can get rid of him, only because there's not a whole lot of save opportunities that Bobby Parnell is going to get as long as he is a member of the Mets. Maybe San Francisco. I mean, they're still only 6.5 out of the division in a very poor division, so one small winning streak can get them right back into the thick of things. But who knows? Maybe they want to start reloading, and maybe they look to unload Sergio Romo. Maybe the Milwaukee Brewers, who are 18 games behind Pittsburgh, maybe they look to get something for Francisco Rodriguez. Those are three teams that I can see Detroit trying to make a phone call to improve that bullpen, because it is absolute junk right now. In the West, it really is a race between two teams and two teams only, the A's and the Texas Rangers. Both of them just keep winning. Oakland is 7-3 over their last 10. Texas is 6-4. So they're all right in the thick of things, the two of them, and it's going to be a race for the entire season. They're even in the loss column. Oakland is normally a team that doesn't go out and improve their team at the trade deadline. This may be a year that they realize, hey, we've got as good a shot as any this year with the lack of a real dominant team in the Central or the East. Now, the Central has two pretty good teams. The East has four pretty good teams. The East has four teams that are at least 8 games over 500. So, but there still isn't that dominant team. And if Oakland picks up a piece or two, they may be that dominant team. They've got a great pitching staff. I think they've allowed like the third or fourth fewest runs in the American League. And they really need to do something to hold off Texas. And it's amazing with Texas. They lose Josh Hamilton. It doesn't matter. They just keep filling in holes. Jerks and Profar, it looks like he's going to be the real deal. Elvis Andrews is having a big year. Adrian Beltre just never seems to get old. And even they're starting to pitch a lot better than we're used to from the Texas Rangers. Over in the National League, you have Atlanta still staying hot. They're coming back down to earth. They're really not playing as well as they were earlier in the year, but they still have a 4-game lead. They're still 12 games over 500. And they seem to be the team that is going to be there for the rest of the year. Washington really seems to be the only team that is primed to make any sort of run at the Atlanta Braves this year. Pittsburgh, they've lost their last two St. Louis won their last three, so they're now in a dead heat for best record in all of baseball. With both of them coming in at a record of 53-34. I would love to see Pittsburgh add another bat. And one bat that I think would be a perfect fit for them would be Marlon Byrd. Again, I know because being located in the New York area, I know what, especially with the Mets, what some of the players have been doing. Marlon Byrd has really given his career a renaissance. He has 13 or 14 home runs. He's a very solid defensive player. He has numerous outfield assists this year. He's a good guy in the locker room, and all he's going to do is make Pittsburgh better. If I'm the Pirates, that's who I'm going after because I think they need one more bat. If they get one more bat, they may be seeing themselves in the World Series this year. And it's funny, you have the Cincinnati Reds with a record of 50-38. If they were in half of the other divisions in the game, they'd be in first place. But now they're 3.5 games behind two teams. As of right now, if the playoffs were to start today, they would be in the playoffs. Both wild card teams would come out of the Central. It would be St. Louis and Cincinnati. As of right now, well, Pittsburgh and St. Louis would be playing a play-in game for who gets the division. But I sort of feel bad for Cincinnati because of the fact that they're and the Central has always been looked at as one of the weaker divisions in the whole sport. They get rid of the Houston Astros, and you still do have your two bottom dwellers with the Cubs and the Brewers. But when you have three teams that are 12 games over 500 on July 7th, it says something about the quality of play in the division. And when you look at the NL West, it is the complete opposite. You don't have one team that's at 50 wins. You only have one team that's above 500. And the Arizona Diamondbacks are in first place by default, only because they're the only ones who really got off to a decent enough start to keep themselves in first place. Now, I don't see them being able to hold off the Dodgers come end of the year. And when you talk about the Dodgers, there's only one player that you can talk about right now, and that's Yasiel Puig. Boy, this kid wasn't even on the top of the Dodgers prospect list. And now he gets called up, and you just can't seem to get the kid out. I want to pull up Yasiel Puig's stats real quick. He is now mentioned in the same sentence as Joe DiMaggio. The only player with more hits during the first month of play that Yasiel Puig had was Joe DiMaggio. One of the greatest hitters of all time. All right, here we go. Yasiel Puig. 127 at-bats, 52 hits for a 409 batting average. 409 batting average through over a month of play. He has 13 homers in a little over a month of play. I'm sorry, 8 home runs in 127 at-bats. One every 15. That you're going to make a lot of money in your future, kid, if you keep putting up numbers like that. 19 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. He's got an on-base percentage of .437, a slugging of .677. For a kid who wasn't on anyone's radar at the beginning of the year, he has now taken the National League by storm. He is this year's Mike Trout. The only thing is that we knew about Trout going into last year. We knew that he was going to be something special. If you want to join the program, feel free to give us a call, 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. Finishing out with the NL West, the Colorado Rockies, it's amazing. They're 5 games under .500, and they're only 5 games out of first place. That tells you something about the quality of play in this division. Colorado doesn't know whether or not they should be buyers or sellers. They're normally sellers because they're a small market team. They can't afford the big contracts. And it doesn't seem, they're not a team that signs their own players for big contracts when they become free agents. They have 2 players who are going to be coveted by most teams. You have Troy Tulowitzki at short, and you have Carlos Gonzalez in the outfield. For my money, Carlos Gonzalez may be the most underrated player in all of baseball. This guy has as beautiful a swing. It reminds you a lot about Ken Griffey Jr. With how smooth, fluid, and productive his swing is. Yeah, sure, he does play in Colorado, but he's not limited to his production being in Colorado. I think he will end up garnishing more interest than Troy Tulowitzki, even though Tulowitzki plays a position that is much more in demand. And the only reason why I see that is because of Tulowitzki's injury problems. If this guy could stay healthy, he'd be the next Derek Jeter with power. He just can't stay healthy. He's a phenomenal defensive shortstop. He's got a cannon of an arm. He can hit for power. He can hit for average. He just can't stay on the field. I wonder if a team like the Yankees would be interested in making a deal for him with Derek Jeter on his way out. I know Jeter started his rehab assignment in AAA. Earlier this week. But we all know that Derek Jeter is in the twilight of his career. Do the Yankees decide to make a move? Do they want to bring in a new shortstop? Do they want to have someone be the heir apparent to El Capitan, as he is known to the fearless leader of the Yankee broadcast crew, John Sterling. So there is your look around around Major Leagues. And I want to get into a little bit of fantasy football. As we start to get closer and closer to fantasy draft season, there's a much different trend this year than you've really seen the past couple years. A couple weeks ago, we spoke to Bob Harris from Fantasy Sports Radio on Sirius XM, and he pretty much let us know that it's sort of going back to the way that fantasy football was drafts looked like in the late 90s and early 2000s. You're starting to see the running backs be the primary targets early in drafts. Adrian Peterson is the number one back, and it's not even close. But then look at what you have. I'm looking at Yahoo's projected ranks, and their top seven players are all running backs. F. Peterson, Arian Foster, Doug Martin, Jamaal Charles, Marshawn Lynch, E.J. Spiller, LeSean McCoy. Then you have Calvin Johnson, and then you have two more running backs with Ray Rice and Alfred Morris. That's nine out of the top ten are projected to be running backs. And doing mock drafts, I'm seeing that happen too. With so many good quarterbacks in the league now, you can really wait until later in the draft to get one of those guys. You're going to be able to, in most drafts, get someone like an Eli Manning, a Tony Romo, Jay Cutler in the 9th, 10th, 11th rounds of a lot of your drafts. Now, depending on whether or not your league is a PPR or a standard may fluctuate as to where you're going to see some of these running backs be placed. I think in PPR leagues, you're going to see C.J. Spiller maybe jump up over someone like a Marshawn Lynch and a Doug Martin. And be one of the, the top three or four backs taken in a lot of leagues. PPR also helps players like a Ray Rice. The only thing with Ray Rice is that towards the end of the year last year, you started seeing Bernard Pierce be used a lot. And I think owners of Ray Rice need to handcuff themselves with Bernard Pierce this year, because if anything happens to Ray Rice, I think we've seen that Pierce can step in and fill the same role that Rice does. Owners of Alfred Morris, I'm a little hesitant as to how I really want to trust him this year. been, we got to see 1 year from a guy who was drafted in the sixth round of the NFL draft. Mike Shanahan changes running backs like he changes underwear. You just never know. And they went out and they drafted two more running backs in this year's draft. And they're very high on the kid out of Rutgers. His name escapes me right now. But, of course, Alfred Morris is going to be the lead guy going into camp. But what's to stop Mike Shanahan from doing what he normally has, or what he has done in the past, and go after a new guy and make him the feature guy? One thing that I'm going to give you this week is my top three sleepers at each position. Now, the way I classify sleepers is players that I think that will finish as a top 12 guy that are being drafted outside of the top 12. So, quarterbacks, you're given top 12. You have Rodgers, Breeze, Newton, Manning, Russell Wilson, Kaepernick, Brady. Boy, Yahoo has Brady as the seventh best option at quarterback this year. Now, that says a lot about what he has around him. If Rob Gronkowski isn't back for week one, Tom Brady will have lost his top five targets from last year. Welker, who is now a member of the Broncos. Aaron Hernandez, who is now a member of the Florida judicial system. Brandon Lloyd, who is gone. Danny Woodhead, who is gone. And Rob Gronkowski, who is still recovering from five off-season surgeries. So after Brady, we have Matt Ryan, RG3, who knows how he's going to come back, Stafford, Luck, and Romo. So those are your top 12. Guys that I can see being top 12 guys that are not being drafted up there, I think you're looking at Eli Manning, you're looking at Andy Dalton, and you're looking at Ryan Tannehill. I love those three this year. If I were to tell you a fourth, I'm going Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer is now in Arizona and has never had the opportunity to throw to a receiver quite like Larry Fitzgerald. Sure, he was the quarterback of Cincy when Chad Johnson and T.J. Houshmandzadeh were in the primes of their career. But he has never had anyone the quality of Larry Fitzgerald. So I love Carson Palmer as a QB2 this year. You can probably get him somewhere in the 13th to 14th round range. Ryan Tannehill is a guy that I absolutely love this year. Ryan Tannehill now has weapons around him. He's got a pretty good offensive line. He's got a tight end that as long as Dustin Keller can stay on the field, is much better than anyone Ryan Tannehill has ever had at that position. He's better than Anthony Fasano was last year. No disrespect to Anthony Fasano, who is a friend of the Back Sports Page family. We absolutely love everything Anthony Fasano does. But Dustin Keller is is a superior athlete, a superior physical specimen than Anthony Fasano was, especially later in his career as we are right now. Over at running back, the projected top 12 that we're looking at is Peterson, Foster, Martin, Charles, Lynch, Spiller, Shady McCoy, Ray Rice, Alfred Morris, Trent Richardson, Steven Jackson, Matt Forte. So this is something different that we are seeing. We're starting to see the younger guys being drafted ahead of the guys that we're used to. Guys like Maurice Jones-Drew are out of the top 12. Chris Johnson is out of the top 12. Frank Gore is out of the top 12. Guys that I am looking at this year to look to jump into that top 12, I love someone like a Le'Veon Bell from Pittsburgh. I think he's going to get a lot of carries. David Wilson, as long as he can stay healthy and hold on to the football, because one thing you do have to worry about is Andre Brown vulturing some touchdowns from him. And let's see. You have Darren McFadden, who's outside of the top 12. But the guy that I will look for to jump into the top 12 that is outside is going to be Mikel LeShore. And again, that's if he can stay healthy. I think he is primed to make the jump into to the next level. So my three running backs are going to be David Wilson, Le'Veon Bell, and Mikel LeShore. Wide receiver, your top 12 projected guys are Megatron, A.J. Green, Dez Bryant, Brandon Marshall, Julio Jones, Demaryius Thomas, Larry Fitzgerald, Roddy White, Randall Cobb, and Percy Harvin. Oh, and then rounded out by Victor Cruz and Andre Johnson. Now, as much as I love Victor Cruz, I think the guy that is going to have a huge year this year, because it is a contract year, is going to be Hakeem Nicks. If Hakeem Nicks stay healthy, he will be a top 12 fantasy wide receiver this year. That's a guarantee. If Hakeem Nicks plays 16 games this year, he will be a top 12 receiver. Another guy that I love to jump into the top 12 this year is going to be Antonio Brown from the Pittsburgh Steelers. With Mike Wallace down in Miami, I think Antonio Brown is going to catch somewhere between 90 and 100 passes from Big Ben Roethlisberger. And he's a guy that can run routes underneath, break one for 80 yards, and he's also a guy that can just beat you over the top. I love Antonio Brown this year making the next step. And my third guy is going to be Cecil Shorts from Jacksonville. Jacksonville isn't getting a whole lot of love when it comes to the fantasy game. And you know what? They probably shouldn't, because who knows what Blaine Gabbert's going to give them. I think Cecil Shorts has the opportunity, especially with Justin Blackmon being out the first four games due to a suspension. I think this guy has garnered the trust of all the quarterbacks down in Jacksonville, And I think he's going to be an absolute stud when it comes to wide receivers this year. And my tight ends, the projected top 12 are Jimmy Graham, Jason Witten, Tony Gonzalez, Gronk, Dennis Pitta, Vernon Davis, Kyle Rudolph, Greg Olsen, Owen Daniels, Antonio Gates, Martellus Bennett, and Jermichael Finley. The same thing, I think that the New York Giants are going to score a lot of points this year. And a reason why they're going to score a lot of points this year is going to be because of Brandon Myers. Brandon Myers, with absolute junk surrounding him in Oakland, caught over 70 passes. He caught 79 passes last year. He now gets to go into a situation with the Giants where he is probably the fourth guy that defenses are going to look to stop. You have Cruz, you have Nix, you have David Wilson, and then you have Brandon Myers. Eli Manning loves his tight ends. Brandon Myers is going to catch, again, between 70 and 80 passes, but his touchdowns are going to jump up from 4. I'm projecting Brandon Myers to score anywhere between 7 and 9 touchdowns this year, and he'll be a top 12 tight end. Another guy that I love is going to be Dustin Keller. Again, this is all based on whether or not he can stay healthy, but Ryan Tannehill is already a better quarterback than Mark Sanchez ever was. And my third tight end is going to be Tyler Eifert, the rookie out of Notre Dame. I think he is going to pass Jermaine Gresham by week 5 as the number one tight end on the depth chart because of his superior athleticism. He's a faster guy. I think he's a taller guy. He has better hands. And if he can work on his blocking, and he was a pretty good blocker at Notre Dame, if he can really improve, I think he'll end up being the number one guy and see a lot more time on the field than Jermaine Gresham. Well, I want to thank you for listening. This has been another episode of Beyond the Benches. Next week, we're going to have some interesting guests, so please tune in. Once again, we are brought to you by Back Sports Page. You can follow us on Twitter at Beyond the Bench. That's the Twitter handle for the show. You can also follow my personal Twitter handle at rstern33bsp for Back Sports Page. Until next week, have a good one.